Welcome to Amplify Your Process Safety, the podcast that provides the experience and expertise you need when it comes to process safety and risk management. Our hands-on approach will give you the insight needed, whether you're new to industry or process safety, in a role where you interact with aspects of process safety, or an experienced process safety professional. Join us in our mission to protect people, the companies they work for, and the communities where they operate by making process safety knowledge available to all.
Hello, podcast listeners, and welcome back to the Amplify Your Process Safety podcast. I'm Rob Bartlett. Thanks for joining us. This is a special episode as I am joined by safety professional, podcaster extraordinaire, and now author Blaine Hoffman. Longtime listeners will remember that Blaine joined my former partner Wesley Carter on three episodes of the podcast a few years ago. His Safety Pro podcast has released about 175 episodes on all manner of topics related to occupational safety. And he's now an author with the 2023 publication of his new book, Rethinking Safety Culture. Blaine, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Rob. I'm excited to be here. This is our first time together with you.
Yeah.
I know. I talked to Wes before, but always good to talk to fellow podcasters and safety nerds. It's that's a growing group of people, but back in the day there was only like three of us, I think, that were doing it. It's exciting.
Or three of us at least that would talk about it on camera recorded, right? Yeah. So
right.
Why don't you tell us I know your podcast audience knows all about you, but let's just assume that that our audience doesn't know a lot about Blaine Hoffman. So why don't you give a brief intro?
Well, as you said, I'm a safety professional. I got started in the mid-90s at the fire department. So my first step into public safety was with the fire service, and then quickly moved into the private sector and have been there ever since in various industries, about a decade as a consultant. So I got to be exposed to all kinds of work and different types of companies and organizations that have been out there, and started the podcast in 2014. Kind of as a joke. There was a client that I was working with, and during the winter, there was a bad couple of weeks of storms, and I kept delaying my visit, and they asked if I could just record a couple of safety talks and send them the recording, the audio recording, and so they could play it over their speaker, the loudspeaker in the break room during one of their breaks. And and it worked out well, and they liked it. So I said, you know, maybe I'll just do this. I mean, I've heard of podcasting by then, but 2014 is still pretty early in the podcast days. And I looked, and there weren't many safety podcasts out there. So I decided to create a podcast talking to other safety professionals on just how we can better manage safety tips, tricks, breaking down some standards, talking about them just amongst ourselves, really. So the podcast is targeted towards other safety nerds like me.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So the one kind of interesting fact here is that your podcast actually kind of gave birth to our podcast, because I think Wesley was a listener to your podcast. And when we started Amplify, he was like, you know, I think we should do a podcast. And I got a guy who I can reach out to who has been doing this for a while. And you gave some great advice to Wesley. And here we are a few years later, and we're still here. So,
I love that you're focused on process safety. Like, and that's what I tell folks about a podcast is you got to be different. What's your differentiator? What's your niche? And I love that that's your focus for that audience, because that's what you do for your clients, right?
Absolutely. That's what we focus on. And we try to make the podcast something that all levels of the organization, you may not get something out of every podcast, but we try to make it so that in general, if you listen to the podcast, no matter where you are in the process safety world or organization, you're going to learn something. So I think today I would like to talk about your book. So I mentioned it earlier. So your book is called Rethinking Safety Culture. Now we're going to talk about that. We're also, I'm probably going to throw in some process safety specific questions or information transition into that, but let's start talking about that, about the book and some of the ideas that you have in there. And before we get into that, first I want to say is, why a book? What motivated you to write a book? I've heard they're hard to write. So why on earth would you do that?
I was so anti writing a book for many years. I'd had colleagues and folks that I have frequently on my podcast that I talk with, and they say the same thing. Hey, how about covering this topic on a book? And I thought, well, why? Why would I do that? I already cover it on a podcast. I already do that. And then I thought, you know, I probably should do it as a personal challenge to myself, really. And it was more of a test, like an experiment is what I like to say. Sure. I had done a series, I think it was a three-part series, I think there were three, on this topic. And I recorded those episodes. And then I thought, you know, how easy or hard is it going to be for me to take content that I created and convert it into like another format? In this case, it was a book. So I literally took the audio files, went on the computers, they kids call them, and actually had them transcribed into text. Okay. Well, then I went in and cleaned it all up because, you know, we don't talk the way we write. You know, so that was weird to see. You want to trip yourself out, have Joe transcribe your audio into a document and then read what you said and go, man, do I sound like that? It's because we talk differently.
I do not think I want to do that. Yeah, we definitely talk differently than we write. So
correct.
Okay, so you based it on that, on those podcasts, and you polished it up and published.
Yep. Yeah, and I had to go get some other research done and put some other references in there. And then I had to provide examples in the book of some things that I was talking about that I did not have the option of doing on the audio version. So the book actually made me go a little deeper on the topic and sort of like justify my position a little bit more. So that it was good. It was a good time. I learned a lot from it. And my second book is almost done that I'll be out with here in 2024 as well. So now I've created a monster. So,
here we go. So this is the first one out of a whole future library's worth. That's fantastic. You know, it just reminds me of that saying that, you know, if you really want to learn a subject, teach it. Right.
Yeah.
And right. So very similar to that. Okay. All right. So got the motivation. So title of the book, Rethinking Safety Culture. So when you say safety culture, what do you mean by that? What are you talking about?
Yeah, I'm talking about something very specific. I cover it in the podcast episodes from years ago, and I talk about it in the book. And what I mean is, and this is, I'm speaking to other safety professionals. So that's the audience. So anybody who's, you know, not in this profession of workplace safety might read this and interpret it a slightly different way. But the idea here is, you've probably heard this, is that we will sometimes lament that, like, our safety culture is terrible here. You know, it's why can't we work on our safety culture? Why don't they, you know, they being the people that lead the business or managers, supervisors, or our leaders. And I always kind of scoffed at that term, and I'm like, what are we talking about creating this unique safety culture? And I was in that camp for many years and thinking the same thing, because I was told that one of your jobs is going to be as a safety leader at this company, at any company, is to instill and strengthen the safety culture. Well, that implies that we have many cultures within the business. Right. Mm-hmm. Where's the HR culture? Mm-hmm. Where's the name anything else? Where's the maintenance culture? Well,
yeah, sure.
Turns
where's
out
the operations culture and all. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But it turns out there are aspects of the workplace culture that include some of these other areas. Right. That we're integral. You can't pull one out separately and just develop that one. Right. Show me a company that has poor quality, doesn't have cost under control, Logistics are just non-existent. They can't even ship to customers. But I'm going to tell you what, they're the safest company you're going to work with. Well, they're not going to be open long.
Right? That's definitely true.
Vice versa. Show me the company that has cost under control, has their focus on quality is top-notch, but they're injuring every other worker out there. That's not compatible. That you can't be good at quality, cost, and delivery if you've got that kind of incident rate and turnover related, and nobody's going to want to work for the company after a while because you get this reputation. Morale is down. Productivity is impacted. So how can cost be? How can you be a cost leader? How can you be a quality leader in the industry? You have to be good at all of them is the point. And safety, for a safety professional, we need to align our efforts with the rest of the business. Why does the business exist? What do we make? What do we sell? What do we produce? And what can I do to help enable those workers to continue to do that? Safety obviously plays a role, and it's paramount. It is crucial. It's critical, yes. But to say that we are going to be a culture of safety, and that's it, like we are going to build a safety culture, I think what we end up doing is we end up using language that only we understand, and we alienate ourselves because most safety managers are the only one of their kind, maybe a couple of you, and you have all these engineers and all these maintenance engineers and all these production supervisors, and we're frustrated because they're not speaking our language. We don't feel like they're passionate about safety as much as we are. And that's just not true. And we have to integrate ourselves into the business. How can I support you? And you start, and I say it in the book, I think safety is the answer to one question. What job needs to be done? What has to be done, right? And then we go and look at that and go, here's how we can do it. So safety is the how, not the why we exist. That's the whole point. Long way around it, but
and going back to the title of the book, Rethinking Safety Culture, that's really what your point is, right? Is that we can't think of it as this thing out on its own. We have to rethink it, and the fact that it's really important to integrate it into everything else. So
it should support the business. Yes,
exactly. So kind of playing off of that a little bit. So I'm just going to quote something. So you say that safety can, quote, catalyze productivity, employee engagement, and overall organizational success, which is kind of what you're getting at here. Mm-hmm. And that's a tall order. And I'm wondering if you can kind of elaborate that a little bit and maybe talk a little bit about how do you align, you said before, like we need to align safety with the other operational expectations, HR, quality, productivity, all that. So how do you do that from a tactical, from a, an actual, getting the job done standpoint?
Yeah. So the example I can come up with here is if you're a worker and you're at a factory, for example, mm-hmm. just imagine whatever mental image you can conjure up of a factory, like heavy industrial factory. Maybe it's dark. Maybe it smells funny. You're sweaty.
Have you been to my clients?
Have you? I've been to many, not your clients, yes. but many of these in the past. Imagine there's noise, there's heat and sparks over here, and you grease on your face, and you're trying to, I don't know, you got this giant like wrench for some reason. I don't know why you have a giant wrench, but just imagine this worker. And then a supervisor yelling, hurry up, get it done. Like, where are the parts? Yeah. And you're worried about falling into this cauldron. I don't know why there's a cauldron there, but it's there. There's a crucible.
Open cauldron of caustic. I'm thinking of the Joker falling into the vat.
Correct.
In the original Batman.
The vat of acid.
That I think that dates me a little bit. But anyway, go ahead.
No, but that's the point. Is like imagine a worker. That's what a worker might be experiencing or feeling when there are uncontrolled hazards. Substandard machinery, poorly maintained tools because we don't replace them, or we make it hard for them to replace them. I mean, just to get a new screwdriver that's worn or a tool that they need to use frequently, They've got to go all the way across the factory floor, maybe across the drive to the next maintenance shed. They got to sign this thing out at the tool crib because we're controlling cost, right? And meanwhile, nobody does that. So they work their tools past their useful life, right?
Yeah.
It certainly increases the risk of slips and knuckle busting and everything else. And so you got a lot of those issues. What's morale going to be like in that factory? What's productivity going to be like? What's quality going to be like? Now, it's going to sound like I'm going to say you need to build a safety culture and all those things will get fixed. No, what we need to realize is how safety is as important as those other things. This is what happens when you take any one of those other domains in the organization: quality, cost, shipping, delivery, production, safety, and you over-index them at the expense of others.
Yeah.
They're all important. All of them are important. The only reason why I'm there as a safety professional is because we have workers doing a job. Mm-hmm. The job is why they're there. The job is why they're producing the reason the company exists. So how can we produce more efficiently, safely, reducing cost, increasing morale, make it a job worth having with some dignity, make what people want to work here. We want to have good benefits. Oh, here's your HR partners. You have to be good at all of them across the board. And I still struggle with trying to come up with like one of those that I'm going to pick out and go, this is it. This one thing is what, forget the others. They'll fix themselves. But this one thing we're going to be really good at.
Yeah.
It's not going to work well. But safety, getting back to the point, the reason why we say safety is first, right, is because if the working conditions are not conducive to being able to focus on the quality of the material and the parts that we're producing and the rate at which I'm producing them, right? Mm-hmm. And because there's uncontrolled hazards, well, then those other things are going to suffer. So in order for me to even be present in that space, in that workspace, it has to be safe and comfortable, reasonably speaking, comfort, right, for me to be there. Then I can focus my attention, you know, from a human factors perspective, right, and human error, when we understand human error, my attention is not divided. I'm not looking, keeping one eye on that vat of acid that I don't want to step into.
Trying not to fall in as I'm turning a wrench or something, right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So it is important. It's integral. You can't separate it from the job. Safety is how we are going to get the job done. It's one of the tools we're going to use to apply to this work that will produce positive results, which is what the business is after. And so that was my point of rethinking safety culture. Let's get a seat at the table with production, with engineering, with maintenance, with the bean counters. I said that like it's a bad thing. You know, with the finance
no
team.
No comment. And,
yeah, with workers' comp, with HR. Yep. And say, how can we, safety professionals, help you, the business, the worker, get more done, enjoy your time here, and make sure that you're able to come back tomorrow and guess what? Do the same thing in a predictable manner. That's what business likes. Business likes that predictive. Oh, yeah. They don't like unknowns. They don't like not knowing what's going to happen tomorrow or the next day. They like
variability.
That predictable. Yes. They don't like variability. Absolutely.
So, you know, it's interesting when you say that, the quote that I said before, that safety can catalyze productivity, employee engagement, and overall organizational success. It as you were talking through that, it just hit me. Try to talk about productivity, employee engagement, and overall organizational success without like assuming bad safety. Like, can you have, you've kind of already said it a little bit, but can you imagine a place which is just atrocious from a safety standpoint, being productive or having employee engagement or being as successful as earning? It's very hard to do that. At least it is for me.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about some specific things that people can do to implement some of your ideas. And I know that one of the things you bring up in the book, and it's an example that I've heard elsewhere, is the example of Paul O'Neill, who was the Secretary of Transportation, or I don't know, something like that, like in the Clinton administration. He left there and ended up going to Alcoa and really focused on safety. And I'll turn it over to you. So, you know, let's kind of maybe take that and bring that into what are some of the specific things that folks can do to improve their safety culture?
Yeah. So this is a great example. Everyone, if you listen to that speech or read it, you will think, oh, he's, you know, he's countering my argument that I made, right? That no, you can drop everything and focus on safety culture and build safety culture. And it's like the field of dreams, right? And everything else happens.
Yep.
What he was saying was, the argument that I'm making is that, and I think he opened with this to the shareholders meeting. This was, a speech to the shareholders, that if you want to know how successful a business is going to be, look at their safety record. And it goes to the point I made earlier. And I got to be careful with this because I am kind of splitting hairs. And again, my audience for this are safety professionals. So we kind of get what we're talking about when I make this subtle difference between a distinct safety culture and integrating safety with the rest of the business. What O'Neill was saying is, if you can't even fix that machine guard, how are you going to ever expect to be a world-class leader in production quality? Like, that's the point. You have to be good at all of them. So yeah, you can look at a company's safety record and determine to some extent, you got to be careful what record you're looking at, what numbers you're looking at, but you can make a pretty reasonable prediction as to increased turnover, which results in decreased productivity, maybe quality issues, depends on the industry. So you can use that as a marker. Here's the thing. So too, could you look at their benefits package and hiring practices, right? And their how they promote and their compensation, all that stuff. If it's terrible, you could probably reasonably make a prediction that company is probably not a very good company to work for. And therefore, what they're producing might not be something I want to buy anytime soon. So that was the point. I used it as an example of at the time it was so bad, he had to put the spotlight on it because that unlocked, or I should say, it represented what we're talking about. That if you can't even keep somebody from getting hurt, how can you expect these other things to happen? We have to bring it all together at the table, because if I can't even fix a guard or a machine, how's my machine reliability from a quality perspective? And now we're getting into process safety, right?
Yeah. Well, and if you can't manage your process safety, if you think it's bad, if the machine goes down because of an issue, how do you think it's going to be if you have a release that causes an explosion at your plant? That's going to affect your downtime. That's going to affect your quality. That's going to affect your productivity. So,
if we don't have a strong, maintenance or reliability program or focus, and we haven't built that into the business, we don't see the value in remaining solvent, competitive, and sustainability or the continuity plan of our business. Like, if we don't invest in a strong maintenance program, given what we produce, right? Mm-hmm. We're not going to invest in that. They break down a lot. I guarantee you they're causing injuries. They're causing spills. Yeah. And you got regulators breathing down your neck. That's safety, is it not?
Yeah.
But people might look at that and go, well, our safety culture sucks. I'm like, no, your maintenance sucks. You need, it's like, if you deep dive it and you get to the root of the problem, it may not be a safety culture issue. It may be that the business, for one reason or another, has this mistaken, rationale that all we have to do is push out as many parts as we can. We'll do the fly, fix, fly approach, right? We won't fix it unless it's broke. We'll wait till it breaks to do anything. Well, you're probably seeing this ripple effect across the rest of the organization. Like, nobody wants to work there. So you get on HR and go, well, what are you guys doing? Aren't our benefits good enough? Aren't you doing pizzas enough in the lunchroom? Come on.
Right. Yeah.
And it's, yeah. So everything matters is my point. Safety, your benefits, HR, employee relations, maintenance, quality, your leadership team, who you're hiring and promoting. That could be the root of some of your problems, you know, the wrong people you're promoting. So,
So, okay. So your main approach, and you spent some time talking about the need to align the expectations that you have at different levels of the company. You need to make sure that you're aligning all of the, whether it's the job description or whether it's the compensation, et cetera, all that's got to be aligned. And we got to make sure that safety is in that equation. If I'm restating your point correctly.
So the part about aligning safety with like in the job description, this is a good example of how safety, when you treat it separately, we inadvertently create a silo and we detach ourselves from the rest of the organization. If you're a production manager, an area manager, or a shift supervisor, and you either are applying for that internally, you're like, hey, I'm working on this machine or on this line and I want to be a line supervisor. Right, because that's the natural progression of a career in manufacturing, or you're an external and you're reading a job posting, right?
Yeah.
And you're reading some of the roles responsibilities, and there isn't anything in there about conducting participate in safety incident investigations, facilitating safety talks at the beginning of a shift, or you know anything related to safety at all. Right.
Yeah.
Well, then safety isn't a part of your job, technically.
Right.
It's all production. It's all crack the rope, yank the chain, keep people working, meet production quotas. You see all that language in there. Well, that's actually the culture you're building.
Right.
You're going to get production managers in there that are measured and evaluated, promoted, and even rewarded for those things. And then here comes safety with their special safety culture and goes
coming in with your safety hard hat on saying, hey, I've got all these things for you to do. Sure.
Yeah. And these extra things for you to do. And then they look at their standard work and they go, well, where am I going to put that
list
in? Yeah. And so what happens is they go and do the shift meeting, startup meeting, and they talk about, hey, later on, we're going to have this machine go down for 2 hours. They're going to change out some stuff. So we're going to shift production over here to these two machines. After lunch, we'll be back on line 4. Any questions? Let's go. And then later on, they come around and go, oh, I'm doing a safety check, you know, and then it feels different. You know, it's not natural because we've bolted it on after the fact. But if we... using the startup meeting as an example, if we say your startup meeting must kick off with any safety concerns coming off the last shift, right? And any open safety items on the board that were a result of suggestions, hazard recognition, or incidents that occurred, things that we found that we're working on that we're fixing, talk about those with the team. Then talk about any quality issues with tooling or machinery, things that could relate to quality issues. And then only then can you start talking about output, right? Because if you don't have those other things lined up, well, output is by definition, I know this is crazy, Rob, an output. It's a result of
Call me surprised.
Inputs.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely.
So if you bake that into the job description of, you know, of the standard work, then they see it as this is my job. It's a part of my job,
part of the expectation. And I'm being held accountable for getting this done as well as all this other stuff, right?
Yeah. And then it becomes a shared belief, activity that everybody engages in. And I believe
that the word we use to describe those shared set of values and beliefs and activities is culture.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So we need to integrate it into what they already have to do. We have to show supervisors and explain to supervisors, now you're a direct supervisor. You're responsible for their safety, their productivity, their quality.
It's not separate.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I've been struggling with a question, and your book was kind of timely. And when I was reading it, I found myself kind of saying, yeah. Because the reason why is because, you know, we go into companies and, you know, these are companies that either maybe they've recently had incidents and therefore they've said, hey, we need to implement some process safety program. Maybe they are just starting and they need to implement a PSM program. Maybe they always needed the PSM program and they just realized that they needed it, or OSHA said that they needed it. So they're putting it in place. And so we go in to help them, and the cultures we see over and over again are safety is the responsibility of the safety person.
Team. Yeah.
You know, right? No. Yep. Half the time it's not a team, it's just a person. So,
right. All alone.
So we've been struggling because, you know, I don't know how many conversations I've had with, you know, our contact, right? It's like, all right, so let's talk about MOC. Who's going to be managing your MOC process? Oh, that'll be me. Okay. Who's going to make sure your PHAs get done on time? Oh, that'll be me. Who's going to manage your process safety information? Yeah, that'll be me. Like, no, you can't. That has to be baked into, as you say, into the job descriptions and the expectations of everyone and where they fit into this PSM program. So definitely a problem, definitely something that we see from the process safety side of things.
It's a shared responsibility, and you're the expert on process safety, not me. I've picked up more about process safety from you all than anywhere else. So, but I'll use process safety as an example. What would you say, in large part, process safety focuses on? Give me an example of an environment. We're talking about like a chemical plant or petroleum refinery is what we think of, right?
Yep, absolutely. Yep. That handles large volumes of flammables or toxic materials.
Okay. So the materials themselves are inherently or potentially hazardous if they're uncontrolled. But the controls that we put in place at these facilities largely depend on the safety person?
It depends. Like, sometimes yes.
How do we receive these materials? Where do we keep them when we're ready to use them in our processes? How do we transport them from point A to point B or throughout our facilities? Like, that's what I'm getting at. There's piping.
The thing is that, so obviously the safety person, whoever that is not responsible for those activities, but the safety person is responsible for, in many cases, is responsible for making sure that those activities are being managed the way they need to be for PSM or for RMP.
By others.
Yes. Because, okay. Because, so, but, they many times they are the ones who are bringing these issues to light, because, you know, mechanical integrity is a huge deal, right? Very difficult. There are so many things involved mechanical integrity. The maintenance person or the maintenance department may or may not be ensuring that what we're doing for inspection, testing, and preventive maintenance is what we need to do to meet ragged gap requirements, right? For OSHA. So at that point, now it's the safety person saying, hey, John, you know, this is what you're doing to inspect this equipment. This is what the regs say we're supposed to be doing, or this is what this standard says we're supposed to be doing. And so they end up needing to be kind of the subject matter expert for everything to make sure it's all being done right. And that's just not possible. It's not possible for any organization.
Yeah. And that's what I began to realize over the years, was that we need this partnership to take place. Yeah. Like, Like, it's weird to me that on paper, you know, in the safeties, in our safety circles, that a safety manager would be responsible for, you know, the preventative maintenance of equipment and machinery only because it might cause an injury, and injuries are in the wheelhouse of the safety professional. So now I've got to be an expert at maintenance and PM, when really what it is I partner with that subject matter expert of, well, what does the tech manual say about this valve or this piece of equipment or this compressor or this machine? I partner with them. And if a maintenance manager is like, why is the safety manager concerned about the maintenance schedule on this equipment? Well, because it just caused an injury. Ah, so we're going to work together. So we have shared responsibility. And that's what I mean by we can't put this in a silo. It is literally, it's something that is integral to the overall functioning of the business itself. And we need this partnership. So.
Well, and that's what I try to drive home with our clients. And again, that's why I find myself responding to your book as much as I was, because that's what's missing. And now I've got a tool that I can give to folks, say, listen, read this, and this is what I'm talking about. This is why you need to have these baked into your processes, into your HR processes, into your management processes, into your job descriptions, all that sort of stuff. So I want to move on a little bit here. There's two more things that I want to make sure that we touch on before we close down here. One is, you specifically say that companies need to have a dedicated digital safety management system. And we agree with that. We counsel folks, you know, that's really the best way to go for managing a lot of this stuff. Can you do it with paper? Can you do it with Excel? Yes, you can. Yeah. Can you do it well? Very challenging to do it well with those tools, not the right tool for it. So just curious, any best practices, recommendations, not necessarily of particular tools, because as we were talking about before we got on the pod, before we started recording, there's so many of these tools out there nowadays, it's kind of hard to keep up, and there's so many of them. But what are the things that people should be looking for, best practices, recommendations, etc.? Anything just to talk about there?
Yeah, we actually, on the Safety Pro Podcast community site that we have, we actually did a panel discussion on this topic, because we had one of our members, a podcast listener, reach out and go, hey, do you like, what should I be looking for? We're looking to digitize, you know, any tips? And I thought, oh, we'll just get like two or three of the most active members on a video call, record it as an episode. So we did this. But for me, I will just say, I won't give any recommendations for particular companies or anything, because they're popping up all over the place. But functionality wise, right? I look for, you can call it the R's, right? Can I record? Can I retrieve? Let's talk about those two. You got to be able to record certain things. First, start with what's regulatorily required, right? Of recording incidents, injuries, mishaps, spills, releases, whatever you want to come up with. Permits, I need to capture and record, memorialize permits, things like that. I got to be able to retrieve this stuff. I got to be able to retrieve it when it's requested by a regulator, requested by a third party, I got to be able to bring it up or recall this information. If there's an incident involving a particular piece of machinery or equipment, I got to be able to pull up records of that machine or equipment. So I've got to be able to easily recall information, retrieve information from that. Right.
Yeah.
So those are the two things I look for, is what can I record? What will it accept? Some systems, it's like, we're only going to keep your 300 log. And it's like, well, what about near misses? Oh, you know, so you got to look for those functionality that it's got to be able to serve what your needs are. The other thing is, it's got to be able to transfer to other departments. This shouldn't be something that the safety team uses. That the safety person, workers need to be able to use it easily. Do we have workstations distributed throughout the facility? Does the system I'm looking at require every user to have an email? That could be hard for some manufacturers. You've got hourly workers, union, non-union. They don't have a company email. We don't issue it to them. So you got to look at all that kind of stuff. What's that?
Language issues.
Yes. Language issues, language barriers. Yeah. And I'm just assuming that we're talking about a US-based organization.
Fair point.
Even though
yeah.
we have language issues inside a US-based organization, you have facilities in other countries. Does this service provider also service those countries? And it has a system that will work in those countries so that we can keep everything in one place. So yeah, a digital safety management system is something that you should definitely look into if you don't already have one. I just can't imagine trying to keep everything on like different spreadsheets and different, and people name things differently and keep them in different folders on this server.
It's crazy. So, you know, I'm just going to add one thing that I think is important, not just for a process safety, digital safety system, yep. but also for let's just say occupational safety. And that is the ability to create actions, corrective actions yep. or preventive actions from investigations, from, you know, yep. from MOCs, whatever, and track them to completion. Yes. So I would just add that to what you said.
Absolutely.
So, okay.
Yeah. There's so many areas we could get into. But you're right.
So you start talking about digital safety management systems. Of course, then that leads right into a conversation about KPIs.
Yeah.
So you do talk about that in your book. So what, you know, if I'm just starting off, you know, my company, I'm like, you know, I really want to try to do what Blaine is telling me to do in this book. what are maybe a couple of the KPIs that I should start focusing on and tracking to improve performance and improve the safety culture?
If you're just starting out, you know, you have incidents, injuries, illnesses, mishaps, property damage. Obviously, you want to look at those. We call those typically lagging indicators. We still have to look at those. There's still some value in seeing what has been happening compared to the efforts we're currently taking and we thought we were taking to improve safety. You still got to look back at those. So that's a great starting point. OSHA still requires these things to be recorded. That's really the metric they use anyway. So we have to record those. But I would start thinking about leading indicators. And then as you mature, you can get into like predictive metrics, right? Mm-hmm. So the example I would give of a leading indicator, a lot of folks, I get myself into trouble with my safety colleagues with this one. A lot of folks will say, well, near misses are a leading indicator. And I say, no, it's lagging because it's something that almost happened in the past that we're now finding out about, that we have to go back and look at how that almost happened, just like an incident.
Okay. Yeah.
So, however, you can look at the number of incidents that get reported versus unreported. And that gets a little weird. What I mean by that is I worked at several organizations that did this. They had incidents where they found property damage, they found forklift damage. They found out, I guess, through the grapevine, either through HR, something that somebody had a minor injury or first aid. And they didn't self-report.
Okay.
And I said, well, that's something you want to look into. You want to look into what was preventing them from self-reporting. Was it fear? They're new and they didn't know how the company would react. They didn't like their supervisor, so they just avoided the whole thing. That's important because that speaks to our culture, right? So those are more leading indicators. Closure rate. How long does it take us to address a hazard that's reported and get it fixed and corrected? And why does it take as long as it takes, or, you know, that kind of thing? Again, culture, right? Speaks to our culture. And then you can even get into things like the percent of preventative maintenance work orders that are overdue, past due, stuff like that. And it all speaks to our ability to effectively manage what we have, control what we can control, focus on what we can control and manage it. And whether we have the right people, enough people, the right resources, budget to do the things that we need to do. Those all snowball and they show up somewhere else, right? It's like a symptom in an illness, right? When the doctor says, you know, hey, doctor, my elbow hurts every time I do this, the old joke. And they say, well, don't do that.
Don't do that.
But yeah, it's like you have a lower back pain and it turns out it's your knee.
Right.
It's starting in your knee. So the leading metrics can often uncover weaknesses, deficiencies in other areas of the business that kind of speaks to what we were talking about of how, oh, so now this is why we need to have a really strong, robust preventative maintenance plan program. We need to invest more in our maintenance department because it is manifesting the lack of our ability to do that. It's manifesting in, quality or even some injuries, as we did our deep dive. So you start putting in metrics to track the qualitative side of our performance, not just the quantitative, like how many events did we have? You look at more of the qualitative stuff. So yeah, you definitely want to move into that category of leading indicators, and then you can get into predictive metrics, which gets all eggheady. And I might just save that for a whole nother book. Predictive metrics.
I think the focus, you talk about PMs, and of course, when I think of PMs from a process safety standpoint, I'm thinking of PMs on safety critical equipment. Right. Yeah. If you have a high temperature interlock, which shuts down my feed pump and turns my reactor on full cooling and whatever, I want to make sure that gets done. So how do I make sure that gets done? Well, you know, what gets measured, gets managed. So you make sure that you are measuring that. And that's where doing the PM. So I think that's one of those ones that definitely translates well into process safety. The incidents, the lagging indicators, all important. Obviously, we have to do those, but you do get obviously more bang, pun not intended there,
right.
More bang for your buck as we start looking at those leading indicators. So, okay, so I think we've covered a fair amount here, and I think that the focus on our podcast here is process safety, of course. And I think that there's a lot of interconnection here, intersection between this whole idea of safety culture. And pretty much, I kind of feel for the most part, every time you've said in the podcast, every time you've said safety culture, we can just put process in parentheses because it's all the same. Yeah, and as you say, it's the same thing that process safety needs to be integrated with safety, HR, all of the quality, all the other pieces that you've talked about before and you talk about in your book. So I think that in order to really prevent our catastrophic incidents, we've got to make sure that our safety systems are integrated with our process safety systems are integrated with everything else.
Yeah. And you notice the title is Rethinking Safety Culture.
Yep.
We're not ditching it. We're not like it's rethinking our approach to building safety into the rest of the business. And from a PSM standpoint, as a layperson, I would say I have to imagine me asking myself as a safety professional from a process safety standpoint, how do we achieve excellence in process safety? What are the things that we need, right? Well, I need maintenance. I need the maintenance and engineering team. I need, because they're going to be critical to how this facility operates and is maintained. The safety manager doesn't go and do the maintenance on the, but I need to partner with that department. So you identify those stakeholders and make sure that you're at the table with them and that you're providing, you're kind of extending that invitation to work right together and integrate safety into those other departments. And I think that's together, that's how we're going to kind of beat that safety culture myth.
And make things better. Okay. Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground here. And before we go, I want to first off, thank you for being on the show here. And I want to make sure that you got a chance here. So where can people find out more about you, about the podcast, the book, anything else that you want to share?
Well, the book's on Amazon. Anybody can go get it. Rethinking Safety Culture. I'm on LinkedIn. You could look up the Safety Pro Podcast on LinkedIn or myself, Blaine J. Hoffman, 2 F's, 2 N's on Hoffman. A lot of folks get stumped by that second N. I'm still talking with my family about that one. I don't know how that got in there, but it's in there.
Seriously.
and of course, thesafetypropodcast.com is where they can find the podcast and link to our community site. We are building a community of safety professionals at that site right there as well. So that's a good time. I try to do a daily coffee topic video each morning. We cover articles and current events, and it's where safety nerds can get together and bounce ideas off of each other and continue to learn and grow and figure out how we can better integrate safety into our organizations.
Yeah. And you know, the none of us is as effective or as intelligent or whatever as all of us. And I think that's a great approach. So, okay, great. Well, so for the audience, if you have a question or a comment about this week's episode, if you have an idea for a future episode, or if you have a question about anything process safety related, we'd love to hear from you. Send us a voicemail using the link in our episode description, or you can always shoot us an email at podcast@amplifyconsultants.com. Our goal here at Amplify Process Safety is to save lives by partnering with companies that handle highly hazardous chemicals to create world-class process safety systems, because we feel that these systems will help prevent catastrophic incidents like fires, explosions, and toxic releases. Please don't hesitate to reach out if we can help you on your process safety journey. And finally, I'd like to thank Blaine for joining us again.
Thanks, Rob. I appreciate the opportunity. I always enjoy your content, mostly because you're the process safety experts, and so you're who I go to for process safety questions, and because I do get those from time to time, and I have sent folks your way as well. So I'll continue to do that.
Absolutely. And likewise for you, for the content you have. And before, and just to give a shout out, your podcast is excellent as well. And I highly recommend any of our listeners. They complement each other. You know, I mean, it's not, we don't go out into plants and work in factories, et cetera, in a vacuum at all. You know, I am not an occupational safety professional, nor do I play one on TV, but I come across it all the time. So having that a little bit of that cross functionality is great. So, okay. So for those of you listening, thank you for investing your podcast listening time, learning about these important process safety issues. And until next time, be safe out there.
We appreciate you joining us for this episode of Amplify Your Process Safety. Head to our website, amplifyconsultants.com, to find our show notes and other resources. Thank you for joining us in our mission to ultimately save lives by advancing process safety right here on Amplify Your Process Safety. Until next time.